We're back on Canucks Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Belly's full thanks to Boston Pizza. This hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. A fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less. Also today, coverage of NHL Free Agency 2025 is brought to you by Homes by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit Homes by David L. Young. .com. This text from Josh in Mission. They've got to extend Sherwood before he scores 20 to 25 goals. Got to learn from this Suter situation.
Yeah, more or less. And I think now's the time, really, if you want to get him signed. If you believe in the player and think he's capable of replicating the year he had last year.
Yeah.
Now the market's been interesting and we still have to give it a few days because we don't know what the scope of it looks like yet. Pugh Suter has yet to sign. You might be listening to this on a podcast. Maybe he has signed at this point, but as of now, he has yet to sign and neither has Nick Ehlers. And neither has Roslovic. So there's still some guys that we were wondering how big their contracts would be that have yet to sign, but that's going to better inform us, I think, about what these mid-range guys are going to be going for. But because of his skill set, now he's not the same size as Tanner Jeannot, and we saw what he got today. He got a 5-year deal worth $3.4 million per season, which is a lot of money. I don't know if he's viewed the same as in terms of that physicality, but he plays tough. He's not afraid to drop the gloves if he has to. Record of hits. You're talking about $3 million at least.
Yeah.
And if he has another big year, he's probably getting upwards of four. It might not be 4 or 5 years, but it might be 3 years. So if you can get him signed now to a contract, you know, whether it's 3 or 4 years, at about three or just under three, I think that would be massive.
Got a couple more texts that I want to get to before we hit the open. This one from Jacob. I think Canucks should trade the first round pick plus Joshua for Raquel or Rossi, but have draft pick protection in case the wheels fall off during the season. That's from Jacob. I hear where you're coming from, Jacob. I think they would be smart to hold on to their first round pick and see where they're at in season before deciding on whether or not they're going to move it. You know, if that's a pick that looks like, yeah, sure, you can put top 10 protection on it and that saves you a little bit, but I still think that's something you maybe want to hold in your back pocket until you get into season and see how the trade market develops. Because, like, yeah, it's like everybody's making their pitch for Rossi and Brian Rust and Rickard Rakell. Like, maybe you want to wait to see if there's other options that open up for you and before you really start to dangle that 2026 first rounder, because, you know, that's what everybody's kind of looking for. If they're going to trade anything, they want the 2026 first rounder right now.
Yeah, and if you're trading it now, there would have to be some sort of protection on it unless the trade is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I mean, the player that's coming back, you're like, okay, well, yeah, it makes sense. But I'm not sure. That type of player is not even available.
Which is also why, you know, Canucks and offer sheets don't really jive, especially if it lands in the, you know, compensation that sends over an unprotected first-round draft choice. That's just foolish for the Canucks to potentially consider something like that. And on Marco Rossi, Bill Guerin did say today that they would match any offer sheet that came Marco Rossi's way. So keep that in mind. Guerin says, if anybody signs Marco Rossi to an offer sheet, we will match. And he also said they'd rather make a deal with Marco. And I think Michael Russo tweeted that out, he meant that they'd rather just get a deal done with Marco Rossi.
As in sign him to an extension.
Yeah.
Well, that story has had a lot of twists and turns, and not that long ago, maybe that leads us into the open, we didn't expect Brock Besser to come back, did we?
No, we did not.
Although, we tried to tell you yesterday that there was still a slight chance
you
to sliver.
I'm not going to take any credit for that. You tried.
We tried a little bit.
All right, let's get to the open.
Welcome to the open.
Oh! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
The Open on Canucks Central, where we bring the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. The latest being they agreed to terms with three players, Mackenzie McEachern, Joseph Labate, and Jimmy Schultz. all on two-way contracts.
Yeah.
Earlier today, they made bigger news, and that was signing Brock Besser to a seven-year, $7.25 million per season. So what, 50.75 on the total value of the contract for Brock Besser. He gets his magic number of 50, and Canucks get to keep one of the best goal scorers in franchise history for probably the rest of his career, certainly close to it.
Yeah, I mean, you never know how the next 7 years are going to go.
Yes.
But this contract gives him a chance to begin and end his career as a Vancouver Canuck. And that is something that you don't see very often anymore. And, you know, and Roman just texted in and said, the Canucks re-signed three players today, Brock Besser, Garland, and Demko, all three who could go into the Ring of Honor. And not wrong. Garland's become a fan favorite, chanting his name, and his numbers are going to be pretty good if he stays here for the next, what, 7 years? And Thatcher Demko, if he stays healthy and stays here, he might have his, who knows where he might be.
Yeah.
So we're talking about three guys who are going to be really long-tenured Canucks. Two guys who might begin and end their careers as Canucks, and one guy who's going to spend the better part of a decade or over a decade as a Vancouver Canuck. So I think legacy-wise, there's certainly something to acknowledge here on both guys, but on Besser especially. And it's funny because, you know, we just mentioned how it seemed like Rossi was going to get traded. And it seemed like not that long ago that Besser was so disrespected that coming back was not an option anymore.
It's crazy how things end up evolving here. And a lot of different factors had to come together for this to end up working out for Besser to stay in Vancouver. I think the lack of free agent options, the lack of trade options for the Vancouver Canucks played a part in them being more willing to lock into Besser long term with that kind of dollar to it, even though I think it's a pretty fair number, if not a number lower than I expected for Brock to sign in free agency. It actually is a number lower than I expected Brock to sign in free agency. And it is lower than he could have gotten, less than he could have gotten elsewhere in this market. I do believe 55, maybe more than 55 was out there in total money for Brock Besser. But it was clear he wanted to stay in Vancouver, but they had to get up to $50 million. Once they did that, it started to come together.
And that kind of, you know, going back a few months, we had talked quite a bit about how the Canucks' last offer, 8x5, was 40, and how they had to get close to 50 to really make it a conversation.
Yeah.
And that Besser was willing to take less to stay in Vancouver, but it was never going to be 10, $15 million less. And now that they got to that number finally, I think for Besser, as much as he was upset about how things went, ultimately him, his partner, I think being in Vancouver mattered a great deal. So
getting,
they got it done.
Calls from Demmer and Garland in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Hey, we're staying, Brock. You want to stay too?
Yeah.
We can keep the band together.
Well, and the thing is, you know, we've seen stuff like this before too, right? So when Mike Gillis took over during his initial press conference, I wouldn't say he threw the Sedins under the bus, but he was pretty critical about the Sedins, and he kind of wondered, you know, publicly if they can actually be difference-making players for them. And wasn't sure they could commit to them, and kind of questioned them a little bit. And then they had an incredible year, and then throughout the whole year, talking extension, and never went anywhere, and it came down to the wire.
Yeah.
Famously, the Sedins were considering leaving. Burke was about to fly to Sweden, and Gillis and
Brian
Gilman?
Burke was, he will say that he was only going to talk to the monster, Jonas Gustafsson,
I'm sure,
at the time.
I'm sure that's what it was. But maybe it was. Who knows? Whatever. I don't want Berkey
there
to call
There was no
me.
Tampering. Yeah. He was going to speak to Jonas Gustafsson and only Jonas Gustafsson.
I'm not going to get on Berkey's bad side right now, especially over something that happened such a long time ago at this stage. But and then their signing came down to the wire. It was Gillis and Gilman flying to Sweden and getting the Sedin signed right before free agency began. So we've seen similar situations unfold before where, you know, words were exchanged. Landeskog with the Avs recently as well. It seemed like they were really hurt about it. But when somebody truly wants to stay somewhere, the door is always open. And that's what we were talking, what I was trying to say yesterday about, hey, the ship sailed. It's sailing away. And it might be close to port somewhere, but it hasn't landed yet. And when there's a real desire and love somewhere, you can always convince somebody to turn around. And last second. I mean, the Canucks really, really did. And honestly, like, there was a sense yesterday and 48 hours ago that Besser wasn't coming back. So yeah. I think that reporting, and you know, I know it's easy to look back at now and be skeptical of. And as much as I was saying, hey, there's a chance, but that was the sense people were getting talking to people close to the situation, that they were not optimistic.
Yeah. We had Frank Saravalli on the show yesterday. He said, ship has sailed, Brock's gone. Obviously, that changed, whether it was, because it happened shortly after free agency. Brock saw what other deals were out there for him and eventually decided staying in Vancouver was ultimately the best thing for him. He has other reasons, you know, personal reasons to be staying in Vancouver as well. So it all comes together. And I think it's a really good contract, considering, you know, Brock was, you know, it was the biggest contract given out today. I guess actually Keandre Miller changes that. That was $60 million total value on the contract.
Yeah.
Gavrikov was close at 49, but 50.75 is right there for Brock as the second best contract given out today, second biggest value contract given out today. And I mean, he's a goal scorer. He's going to finish as a top five scorer for sure in Canucks history, has an outside chance of catching Daniel Sedin. All these things are good, but you bring back Brock, you bring back Demko at 3x8.5, which was announced early this morning. Garland's contract officially announced at 6x6. He stays. And you look at this, and we talked to Patrick about this, and he made a very compelling point on, while it might seem like the same team, it's not really the same team, but you brought the band back together. You're keeping this core together that has had moments of success, but ultimately less success than you would want to see as a Canucks fan. So is this a band worthy of bringing back together? Is the reunion tour worthy of paying the admission price for?
Find out beginning. What is it? what's the first game of the season? October or whatever. So I think if you look at what the Canucks forward group looks like right now, we can just run through it real quick. These are the guys that are on one-way contracts next season. Kane, Pettersson, Besser, DeBrusque, Hedl, Sherwood, Joshua, Bluger, Garland. I'm just keeping, you know, the Joshua, Bluger, Garland trio together. It's not to say I'm putting Garland on the third line. Don't get angry at me here. And O'Connor, Ratu, and Hoglander. Those are your 12 forwards currently.
Yeah.
I mean, they need a center, clearly. Their wings, if you want to compare the Canucks wingers to the rest of the National Hockey League, it's the same wing group as last year, but they've added Kane to it now. They don't have Pew Suter, but he's a bigger body, he's faster. So I think as far as forechecking goes, their wings are sturdier with Kane. And I think if you look at how they're now built, every single one of these wings can forecheck. So in terms of playing to the team's identity, I think the wings are well situated for it. Again, it's the center that's the glaring, you know, omission here that they really need to add. But as far as the wings are concerned, how would you compare it to the rest of the league? Just below average? Average? Yeah. It's certainly not top third of the league. It's not top 10 or anything along those lines. I don't know if it's bottom 10 of the league. Is it average, slightly above average or below average? Where would you kind of rank the Canucks wings? Because Kane and Besser, DeBrusque and Garland are legitimate top six wings, all four.
Yeah.
Maybe all four are second line wings, to be honest. They're missing that high end wing. Or two high end wings.
I'd say it's about average because, you know, any of the top teams, they have at least one. Most of the top teams would have at least one real needle moving winger, you know, whether it's, you know, even Zach Hyman, when he's at his best, is a first line winger with a bullet. You know, Marner goes to Vegas. They've got one. There are a ton of great wings in this league, and the Canucks have some good ones, but you're still missing a great one.
Yeah.
So not only are you missing a center, but you're also missing another true impact player. And Besser, you know, when Besser scored 40 goals, he was kind of there. Garland's one of the better 5-on-5 forwards in the league, so I'll give him that. Kane, you know, Kane can do some really good things, but ultimately he's on the latter stage of his career at his age. So I'm not sure he's kind of an impact player in that same way. They still need an impact forward.
Yeah, like
I can't look at this any other way. So
okay,
at best, if you're being real glass full about it, it's average. But to me, it's still below average.
So that's kind of the range that they fall in. Ultimately, it comes down to having elite players. If you find one more elite center and a wing, then I think you become a Cup contender.
Yeah.
You know, but that's two elite players. That's not easy to find. The Canucks are trying to find one, and it's been hard. Try to find two. It's very difficult.
Maybe you get lucky and, you know, Lekkomäki develops into that.
Or something along those
or
lines.
Or something, and you find a center somewhere.
Or something. But something has to kind of fall your way. Or you have to get so stacked as far as the second-tier players throughout your lineup that you make up for it as far as the quantity goes. We still need those difference-making players. But as far as pushing for a playoff spot, and I agree with what Rick and Vic says, whether all this is worth it or not ultimately comes down to Quinn and his commitment or not. And it seems like this is a plan as far as keeping these guys that Quinn's happy with.
Yeah.
The sense that we've got asking around, that he's very much on board with keeping these guys and how the team is shaping up. And I think these guys all understand that this year they're not going to become a Cup contender. But how much closer can you get? And can this team, as constructed now, if you add a center that can do some of the dirty work, you should be a playoff team,
yeah,
a wild card team. We saw what the LA Kings did or didn't do, which we can get into here.
They did a lot.
They did, but at the same time, okay, I think we all agree that the Kings should be third. Like the Pacific Division, you go Vegas and Edmonton 1-2,
yeah,
whichever order you want. Mm-hmm. And then the third team, by default, is the Kings. It might be a soft three.
Yeah.
Now, are the Canucks good enough to get there? They need some work to get there, and that doesn't make you a Cup contender. You're still like a tier, couple tiers below the high-end teams. But if you can add a center now, because you brought Brock back, you add a wing and Kane that can, you know, solidify your group to some degree as far as how you want to play. With the defense they have, the goalie tandem, this should be in that mid-90 to high-90 point range if they stay healthy and things go their way. So they should be in the mix to be a playoff team. But can you be more than that? And that comes down to your point. You need to add two significant players.
If everything goes our way, we're a playoff team. That's the range the Canucks are back in on. So, you know, bringing the band back together, you know, I've seen this text a couple of times. I've gotten it on Twitter as well. You know, we're just committed. Canucks are just committed to being mid. Forever mid. And okay. I get the sentiment. But essentially what they've done is give themselves the chance to be open to the opportunity that we're two big pieces away. But if that impact piece does somehow become available in trade and we're able to land that player, then we're that much closer to being a true contender. That,
yeah.
They've not, nowhere will you find Patrick Alvin say that we're a Stanley Cup contender after the moves we've made today and the people we've brought back. They still know that they're these pieces away. It's just they were unable to make that happen in trade. It's been a stagnant trade market for the most part. So you just got to hope that that opens up during the season when more teams fall out of the race and decide to become sellers.
I think what they did today was give themselves a chance. Mission's not accomplished, not even no. close to it, but you're giving yourself a chance over the course of the offseason and at least to begin next year, if things go your way, that you can inch closer as the year goes on or as the summer evolves. You know, mm-hmm. if you had not signed Besserud today and all the other guys go off the board, well, now it's not only do you have to find somebody to replace Besser, and you still have to go find the two other guys we're talking yeah. about. And then you're sitting there saying, man, you're really behind the eight ball here. So what they've given themselves a chance to have a chance.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Next year. But there's still a lot more work to be done. You know, well, mission's you not accomplished.
You might have spent that money in a less efficient way yeah. than bringing back Besser at 7.25. Like
yeah.
in this cap environment, Besser at 7.25, being in a down year, a 25 goal guy, like you're totally fine with that.
Well, and then if you have to spend trade assets to replace Besser, then yeah. what assets are you spending to get the guys you really need to become better? So to your point, you can't keep robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yes.
And at least signing him and the fact you have some trade assets remaining, okay, you're positioned to make an addition at some point.
Yeah.
If you're able to kind of pull that off. So I'm okay with it from that standpoint. And the other thing, as far as Quinn is concerned, I think, and Alvin, you know, essentially said, it's not about Quinn, it's about the whole team. And I think that's the best way to go about it, because it's about, hey, do we have a good environment that Quinn wants to be in? Not just about an environment yeah. that caters to one person, because that's not tenable. That's not something you can really live with long term. But I think we keep looking at Quinn as, okay, the Canucks have to commit to him. We have to get a long-term commitment from him. But I think it's possible that Quinn signs a shorter-term deal with the Canucks
right.
when the contract comes up. So if Quinn sees enough, I don't think it's like, hey, I have to sign here for the next 7 years. I don't want to do that. He might, if things go well next year, be like, you know what? I see where this is going. I'll do a 3-year extension.
Mm.
And I'll give you a couple more years. And if things don't go right, okay, then you guys can move me or whatever. We can figure it out. But I can see that being a path that's more realistic, because if you're thinking it as, hey, we have to convince Quinn to stay here for 7 years, well, then it gets a little dicey. But can you get closer enough where if he's thinking short term, would you consider being here? And I think today, I don't know if it got you closer to that, but I think it gave you a chance at least to be alive in the race, so to speak.
It's an interesting spot that the Canucks find themselves in, how things evolved, because they've kind of backed into something we talked as what might be the most optimal way of handling this offseason.
Yeah.
Not spending too big of a trade asset on a player you're projecting on, like a Marco Rossi. And they were in on Rossi. We know they were in. Their trade offers were rejected. But Minnesota asked for more, and they said, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I commend them on that. This is an offseason where, yeah, you've kept the band together for the most part and brought back and brought in Evander Kane on top of it. But that's probably the best way to go about things with such a soft free agent market and a trade market that just was not budging.
Yeah.
Because the only thing you could have done was be irresponsible and get overly aggressive, and they stopped themselves from doing that.
Honestly, I mean, we'll see what happens, but it seems like them trying to get that needle moving high-end player, like he mentioned, it's going to take time.
Yeah.
You know, and I think as far as next year is going to develop, if you can just add a guy that can kill some penalties and kind of be in the race and stay in the playoffs race, so to speak, and feel like at that point you can buy, well, because of the cap situation then, it becomes easier to add somebody throughout the year. So you not having cap space is less of an issue closer to the deadline. And can you get to a position where you're one of the best players available at the deadline, you can trade for and then extend?
Yeah.
And is that a path forward next year? And where, hey, you play it by ear, see how it goes. If things go well, now you can add. You're spending the draft pick or whatever, or prospects. You're not spending, you know, anybody off the roster necessarily. Because next year, too, the Canucks are going to have upwards of $17, $16 million in cap space for 4 or 5 spots.
Yeah.
So they are going to have space next season to make a big addition to this group already, despite everybody they've signed. So there is flexibility if you play your cards right, but things have to align. And we know going into last year, this team's not as good as it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year with JT Miller, with how that team was built. Now, they had some weaknesses and things kind of fell apart. But the expectation last year was compete. This year, it's can you make the playoffs?
Yeah.
So the expectations for where this organization is now versus where it was last year has completely changed, and that happened as soon as they moved JT Miller.
Well, plan for next year. Edmonton, things go sideways with the Oilers, and you just make a play for Connor McDavid at the trade deadline. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a free agent.
Good move.
Yeah. But yeah,
it's totally plausible. Outcome that I think could very well happen for the Vancouver Canucks.
He could go Oppo Messier.
Lekkerimäki, Besser, 4 first round picks.
Doesn't matter.
Future considerations, that get it done?
That would be some kind of a scenario if it were to play out. Kidding aside, we'll get more into your texts, question marks, and other things to ponder about with the Canucks offseason. What some of the other things happened were around the league. And what it means as a very soft market maybe tells us about how the future of a larger cap era and a big rising cap era that we're entering might shape the future of the National Hockey League. Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Canuck Central.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.